views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to the Conscious Business Radio Network. The FDA has been scrutinized for blocking promising treatments and research for many chronic diseases and conditions. It has also been accused of being significantly behind the rest of the developed world. Some people say it's 5 years behind, you know, Europe and Japan and the rest of the developed world. Others, people say that the FDA completely blocks treatments altogether. From, you know, the U.S. market. But on the other hand, they do protect the American people. They keep the unscrupulous doctors off the streets, and they do block treatments and things that are just not good for people as well. So who do you believe in this whole game? I mean, the truth is more complicated than it appears, and an easy answer really does not exist. But you know, the FDA, for all the things they did do, keeping bad treatments and unscrupulous doctors from harming the public, they also fast-track drugs for deep-pocketed pharmaceutical companies while stalling less financed companies who really have a safe and more promising treatments for many diseases. Today I have on the show Matt Feshbach, who is the CEO of Okeanos. And it's a clinic and research facility located in the Bahamas working on therapies using adult stem cells. He has one of those companies that their treatment is legal all over Europe, Japan, Singapore, all over the place in the developed world. And it's actually pretty advanced therapies, but in the United States it's blocked and it's illegal. And they keep fighting to keep these kind of treatments available for people. And the amazing thing is that it's so promising for the people that do use it. They're yielding amazing results for people. You know, the results are accelerated tissue repair. They stimulate tissue regeneration. This is what adult stem cells do. They decrease inflammation. They prevent further cell death, and they create new blood vessels. And these things, that work that the stem cells, adult stem cells can do, can really help people with heart disease, autoimmune diseases such as MS and diabetes, and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and even strokes. They've been able to take people with like rheumatoid arthritis who are in wheelchairs, and they're out of wheelchairs and being able to live normal lives. Same with MS. They're just doing amazing things with science and medicine, and it's kind of a shame that the United States is not, is just not on board with this stuff. And, you know, you kind of wonder why. But he's going to be coming on, and we're going to be talking about what's going on with the FDA, what the challenges his company faces, how his technology works, and the treatments that he has, and, you know, what adult stem cells are. But from their website, this is an interesting, I'm going to read a little bit of what they say about adult stem cells. And this is the stuff that's coming out of people's body fat. They use that because I guess there's a higher concentration of stem cells in that part of our body, in the fat. So this is what they say. The adult stem cells stored in your body fat could be likened to small physicians who diagnose and correct individual areas of the body in need of special attention. Because these cells have the capacity to detect changes in the body which are causing pain or dysfunction, they respond and communicate with the body's needs to provide the correct tools needed for healing. These adult stem cells are commonly referred to as repair cells for their ability to heal injured organs or body parts. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. So I'm excited about this. I know people who have MS, who have rheumatoid arthritis that I think could benefit from this, and I'm sure many of the listeners out there do as well. And so I'm really excited to talk to him today about this. So let's welcome Matthew Feshbach to the program. Hi, Matt. Welcome to the program.
Hey, hi.
So you had a 30-year career as an investor and a hedge fund manager, and then you went out and you created this amazing help the world company called Okeanos, right? Okeanos?
And you got it. Okeanos.
Okay. So you're the founder and CEO of that company. It's a cell therapy stem cell treatment provider, and you're in the Bahamas. Okay. You got to tell us the story about this and how it started and why you're there and kind of why you went from being a Wall Street bigwig to now being a Save the World bigwig.
Well, I'm not, Sarah, thank you. I'm not sure I've ever been a bigwig, but it is a bit of an interesting story, and I'll cut to the chase so you don't have to listen to too much of it. But in essence, I started one of the early hedge funds in 1982, and I didn't have a background in it as an investor. I'd actually taught tennis to some great investors, and so as a result,
well, that's the best way to get in. You teach tennis. I'm giving you crap.
No, doesn't everybody do it that way?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you probably knew more than half the people on Wall Street.
Well,
just starting out.
The interesting thing about the way I started was that it was really self-taught, starting with a course from what was then a mail order company called, if that's the right word. It's not mail order, but, you know, it was
you could order
correspondence
things.
Course. In those days, because it wasn't online, they called it a correspondence course from something called the New York Institute of Finance. And New York Institute of Finance had a very big textbook on securities analysis, and they had a course. And it basically entailed learning how to read balance sheets and income statements and doing other kinds of analytics on publicly held companies. So I took that course, and I got very, very obsessed and intrigued with, financial analysis. And then I started reading books by great investors and meeting some, and learned the research side of the business really from just meeting great investors.
But that's how you learn more, right? By diving in and really researching it. And then you become part of it, and you learn it at a different level.
Well, that's how I learned. And that's definitely been something not only that I think has been beneficial to me, but I think is a fun way to live. It's a fulfilling way to live, because there's really nothing that people value generally more than learning. Like, if you feel like you're learning something every day, you feel like you're living.
Yeah, I would say that. That's me right now.
Oh, good. Yeah, excellent. So in any event, as part of that process of learning the investment business and then doing it, I started a very early hedge fund in 1982 when there were only 51 hedge funds. So we were the 52nd. I did it with my two brothers, Joe and Kurt. And we relied very much on doing deep, deep anecdotal research, or what they call in the investment business scuttlebutt research. So we would call people. If it was an oil and gas company, we would call people in the oil and gas business. If it was a technology company, we would call people who would know their technology or know their
distribution. So you went beyond the accounting, the balance sheet, and you talked to the people on the street to see, is this real, or what are they doing, and how good is their management? And I mean, you really did your homework.
Yeah, and we were very well known for that. If someone were to find articles on Feshbach Brothers in the 1980s, they would a lot of that would center on the research we did. So I'm kind of a natural born researcher, but very anecdotal, a lot of reading. You know, I'm not a scientist by any stretch. I'm kind of the opposite of that, but I love research. So you fast forward to 2009, and I've been through some ups and downs in my investment career, no doubt about it, as many investors have been. But in 2009, a friend of mine asked me if I had ever heard of anything called or heard anything about something called personalized medicine. And I said, well, what's personalized medicine? I mean, it's sort of self-definitional, but obviously there's more to it than that. And he said, well, as an example, you could use your own stem cells. These are the most basic cells in the body, and they are the cells that both develop a body and then can repair the body.
They're also, aren't stem cells immortal? They don't die. They just keep replicating. Is that true? That's my understanding, is that they're just these cells, they're amazing cells, but they can replicate forever.
I don't think that it's correct that stem cells don't die. Their job is to replicate, but I'll give an example in a little bit about which cells do die and when they die.
Okay.
Which stem cells and which ones actually maintain their stemness or potency and viability through your whole life.
Okay.
But that's a little bit of a fast forward. So, but in any event, so he mentioned this idea that there was something called personalized medicine, and that your own adult stem cells could repair your own personal, you know, issues like injured tissues or organs or chronic disease.
So they could, so, they can go in and they can, by repairing, they can go in, because they can become any cell, right? So they can go in and by repairing, they could recreate the cells that are damaged.
Bingo. Exactly. That's exactly right. And that's their job when you're adult stem cells, right? So when he mentioned that to me, I put my research hat on and I started reading, about what stem cells are, how they could repair the body, where they came from, and talk to researchers literally from Israel to Japan and LA to New York and Chicago and wherever to try to really understand what stem cells could do, the best source of those stem cells, and the best way to repair them. And of course, it's very early in the whole cell therapy research and therapy evolution, but I came to this epiphany one day that cell therapy, and the reason we call it cell therapy is because there's more than just stem cells involved. There's stem and regenerative cells.
Okay.
So, but, you know, kind of the lead singer in the band are these stem cells, right? But in any event, so there are these, I had this epiphany that cell therapy would be the next phase in the evolution of medicine. So first we had surgery, then drugs, then devices. But the ultimate way to repair the body is your own biology.
So basically your own stem cells can pretty much repair anything. I mean, if we really get our act together and really understand how to use stem cells, we could completely redo medicine because we could use stem cells for all sorts of things.
Right. So there was a very interesting paper that was written by the president of Texas Heart named Dr. James Willerson and the director of stem cell research at Texas Heart, Dr. Emerson Perrin, and it's called Buying New Soul. And the point of that research paper was that stem cells could potentially and this is theoretical, but potentially create physical immortality. So we're a long way from there, and you know, that's not today, but who knows? It could be in 20, 30, 50 years where people live a whole lot longer, but they don't. The trouble today is people are living a lot longer than they used to, but the trouble is they're not living better. So whether it's things like Alzheimer's or heart failure or Parkinson's or osteoarthritis, when people get into their 60s, 70s, and 80s, they're going to the doctor a lot.
They feel like, a lot of pain. There's just a lot of issues.
Yeah. I mean, just one amazing statistic is that in the U.S. population, half the population has a disease, or what doctors like to call a morbidity.
Yeah.
25% of the entire population has two or more morbidities. And at the age of 65 or older, which I'm almost 65, 80% of the population has two or more morbidities.
Wow. So we have a lot of sick people that are older. I mean, that's just part of natural our life right now.
Right. And so what happened is if you go back 50 years or 75 years, people were dying from, you know, diseases like epidemics, like the flu or tuberculosis or car accidents or things like that. Now that's become a very small percentage of the cause of death. It's mostly chronic disease now. It's cancer, it's heart disease, it's Alzheimer's.
Well, what is the difference between adult stem cells and embryonic stem cells? Because, you know, you heard a lot about embryonic stem cells, and it creates this big religious debate on whether it's moral to even use them. And, you know, it's just, there's a huge debate on this, but we're not talking embryonic stem cells. We're talking cells in our own body.
Correct. So it's a really great question. So if you think about it, we're all walking stem cell products, the sperm and the egg. And the sperm and the egg become the embryo. And in the embryo, there's only about 90 stem cells, if I recall correctly. And those 90 stem cells are these blank slates. And like you said, they're self-renewing. And they also differentiate or to put it another way, they change into or become all the different cells of the body. So embryonic stem cells become blood cells and nerve cells and skin cells and, you know, all the different cells. And they develop a body. So it takes about 9 months, but they develop that entire body.
And those specific stem cells will replicate and they'll create more.
Right. And so they're developmental cells. Embryonic stem cells develop a body. So it makes sense that the original research was really focused on embryonic stem cells because they've been literally known about for a couple hundred years, I think at least. And, they've been known about for a couple hundred years. And, you know, researchers and doctors said, well, gee, if a guy's had a heart attack, maybe we could just grow him a new heart muscle. Or if a guy's had spinal cord injury, maybe we could just grow a new spinal cord. You know, and I'm exaggerating a little bit, but that's the logic behind embryonic stem cells is they're developmental cells. So as you point out, there's two important issues with embryonic stem cells. One is, you know, in order to harvest embryonic stem cells, you have to have an abortion first. And so, obviously, that's not a particularly well accepted thing.
Or can't you use fertilized eggs that were outside the body, but still there has to be a fertilized egg, right?
I don't know about that, to be completely honest.
Okay.
Because I haven't focused my...
That's okay.
I haven't focused on it. But the other thing is you don't always know what they're going to grow. because they're developmental cells. So there's been some belief that there's risk of tumor growth. And so the research was slowed down quite a bit by the Bush administration for moral reasons, but it's also been slowed down by the research community because of medical risk. So there's not been very much progress with embryonic stem cell research. Adult stem cells are really interesting and are getting the bulk of the attention, the money, and the research, because these cells are repair cells. And their job isn't just to grow you a new cartilage if you damaged it skiing. Their job isn't to grow you a new heart if you had a heart attack. Their job is to repair the cartilage or repair a broken bone or repair a broken heart, to say, you know, to be a little bit trite. So these adult stem cells are in every tissue of your body. So they're in your skin, your teeth, your eyes, your brain, your bone marrow, which is where a lot of the research has gone to bone marrow stem cells, but they're most abundantly in your fat.
And why is that? Why would there be so many in your fat? And it's, you don't have more because you're fat, because you have the same amount of cells, they just get filled up with fat, right? Everybody has about the same.
Yeah, on one hand, that's correct, but, you know, fat is a pretty big percentage of your body.
Yes.
Right?
And I have a lot of it. Well, I don't have that much. I have more than I want.
I've seen your picture.
Yeah, but...
I've seen your picture.
Like I said, I do too much. I'd rather sit and eat and watch TV, and that's my problem.
Okay, well, you know, I'll
we digress. Let's get away from me and my fat. But
when it comes to adult stem cell therapy, this is one of the few circumstances in your life where you can't be too rich, but you could be too thin. So it's lucky you got a little extra fat.
Because you take it from the fat, but why from the fat?
Okay, so you've jumped a little bit ahead, but the thing is that fat, in order to stay alive, has to have blood flow. And for there to be blood flow, you have to have these stem cells in your fat that keep those blood vessels alive. And, you know, when you gain weight, you don't gain new cells. Those cells expand,
mm-hmm.
right? Like you're not really...
Unless you're pregnant and then you get new fat cells on your belly.
Well, I haven't been pregnant, so I didn't know that. I know that you gain weight, but I didn't know it was actually
And another little present that women get, besides stretch marks, is they get new... It's the only time in your life that you gain, from what I understand, you gain new fat cells. And so it's just a little gift that you get.
Well,
so.
The good thing is we can almost always find some fat on a woman, and we can't always find fat on a man. So this is good news. But in any event, so those stem cells, their main job in your fat is to keep that fat alive with blood flow. But you asked a question earlier, which is, do stem cells ever die? Or do they just self-renew? And the answer is, in your bone marrow, the number of stem cells you're born with in your bone marrow is orders of magnitude higher, like many orders of magnitude higher than when you're in your 60s. So some people say, well, gee, you know, stem cells in your bone marrow, there's a lot of research that's been done on them, and aren't they better? And part of the answer to that question is, well, how old are you? Because you might not have very many left. And by the way, stem cells in your bone marrow, and there's this key stem cell we're talking about. So there's a few different kinds of stem cells, but the ones that are repair cells that are in your tissues, in your tissue are primarily called mesenchymal cells. And mesenchymal cells were discovered and named by a doctor or a professor at Case Western named Dr. Arnold Kaplan. So he's considered the father of the mesenchymal cell.
Okay.
And these are repair cells, and he calls them like an injury drugstore. And he says that these cells can treat, I think he says, up to 40 different conditions or diseases. But in order to do that, they have to be able to do five different things. So the first thing that you pointed out is to be a stem cell, they have to be able to differentiate into all the different cells in your body. And that's correct. So if you put these cells into a knee that needs cartilage repair, they will differentiate into cartilage. Or if you put them into a broken bone that didn't fully heal, they will differentiate into bone. And if you put them into a heart, they actually become little heart muscle cells. Trouble with, if they only did that, the problem is that it doesn't really fix the problem.
Because you still have the cells that are dysfunctioning.
That's a very simple bottom line way to put it.
Well, that's what I am. I'm simple and bottom line.
That's right. I know.
I don't know if that's a compliment. I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but if we don't do it simply, I won't understand it. So that's what we have to do.
Look, don't ever change, baby. That's all I can say. Okay, so, but if you understand chronic disease, and that's a rhetorical you, or if you study chronic disease, which as a lay person who hasn't been to medical school, hasn't studied biology, it's all self-taught, you learn that chronic disease involves four other factors besides tissue degeneration or nerve degeneration or whatever the primary, kind of failing is in the body. It also involves inflammation. And most people are aware of the fact that inflammation is the precursor to virtually everything.
Yeah, inflammation's bad.
Yeah, inflammation
another
bottom line.
Yeah. Inflammation bad.
Yeah. No, you're correct.
Well, it has a lot to do with brain disease, all sorts of diseases. From what I understand,
there's pretty much not one that it doesn't ultimately involve. But other than a true genetic disorder, all these diseases have as a precursor inflammation. And that inflammation leads to, and I'm not discussing cancer. We don't treat cancer, and I don't understand cancer. So leaving that aside, if you look at heart disease or osteoarthritis or autoimmune conditions, they start with this inflammatory response, and that also leads to an immune response. And the immune response is your immune system attacking your body or some part of your body in order to save it. As a just a off kind of a one-off example, most people don't realize that the thing that triggers a heart attack is an immune response in the plaque. The thing that caused the plaque was inflammation.
Do these cells go in, find the problem cells, and kill them?
Not exactly, but they do know what to. So they're regenerative, right?
Okay. So do they fix them?
Well, let me just finish this one other point, and then I'll explain to you how they repair.
Okay.
So when you have chronic disease, you have inflammation, you have an immune response, then you have lack of blood flow or what's called ischemia, and then finally, you end up with this tissue degeneration. You don't necessarily start with tissue degeneration. That comes later in the game.
That's a consequence of the other factors.
Yeah. And, of course, I'm not a doctor or scientist, so I'm talking generally, like I'm generally correct on this, and somebody could debate whether this was true for that particular patient and this particular sequence. But generally, these things all are part of the same picture. And that tissue degeneration, by the way, leads to scarring, right?
Yeah.
So if you put these cells into a knee, the great thing is not only will they help to repair the cartilage, but they'll reduce the inflammation. They'll modulate that immune response. They'll actually grow some new little blood vessels. That's called angiogenesis. And they'll reverse some scar, maybe not all of it. And then they will also regenerate that tissue, like I said before. So we have before and afters of patients who have had all of their meniscus removed. That's the cartilage that cushions the knee. They had swelling. They had bone damage. They had scar. And you can see that within about 6 months, there was some new meniscus on image that the swelling had gone down. The scar had reduced. The bone damage was not evident. And that's because the cells are what they call multipotent or multi-mechanistic. They do a lot of things.
Well, that's really incredible. So, you know, people that are getting knee replacements and things like that, could they use this as a means of dealing with that instead of going in and getting something inserted into their knee?
So again,
could it grow? Could it help with cartilage issues and things that are missing?
Mm-hmm. So
that's
you know, there's.
So my dad, who just got both of his knees replaced, he could have feasibly done this.
Right, and you know, I'm assuming your dad did great with his knee replacement, no problem. But it's not a riskless operation, and there are a lot of people who get those but never really get full recovery of function. And some end up in wheelchairs. It's not pleasant.
But those are less.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
if you're in
your question.
If you're in
sorry,
a no, that's okay. If you're in a wheelchair, that's pretty serious ramification. But in general, those are less serious issues because it's something that we can do, and it's. But there's real diseases that like heart, you know, heart disease and rheumatoid arthritis and all these other things that you're talking about, that you can really solve, or not solve, but at least make a lot better, that are pretty serious diseases.
Right. So to go back to knees and hips and shoulders and backs, we've probably done, I don't know, we've been treating patients for about a year. Patients do have different responses, but orthopedic, we've had almost no non-responders, meaning zero improvement, but on the other side, we've had, to the best of my knowledge, we've only had one patient who opted for a surgery or a replacement post cell therapy from Okeanos. So that means that they had enough symptomatic relief or minimally didn't get worse, and these are all degenerative diseases, so if you just didn't get worse, that's a win in medicine, right?
Especially if you catch it right away.
Well, no, but I'm saying that let's say you've had a chronic disease for a long time, it's getting worse and worse and worse, and you halt it, that's a win.
Yes, that's still a win. But if you catch it right away, then you can go on your whole life without ever really developing it.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying, is we've had some patients that are very degenerated, that have been prescribed hip replacements, knee replacements, shoulder surgery, back surgery, in wheelchairs occasionally, not that often, but it's happened, and none of them have opted for surgery but one. That's a huge win.
Sure, yeah.
So we have many that were prescribed knee replacements, none that have done it. Patients who have been prescribed hip replacements, none who have done it.
How about for chronic, for other types of diseases like rheumatoid arthritis or some of these other ones that are pretty debilitating in other ways?
So I got an email today from a doctor who, or actually from the medical office of a doctor who did the follow-on treatment for a patient that we treated for rheumatoid arthritis, who showed up in a wheelchair with braces on her arms on Oxycontin and an immunosuppressant drug and steroids. So she was on every med, and it was, and couldn't even get out of her wheelchair. And per this little note I got today, it was a congratulations. This patient is living a normal life.
So
I'm not saying that everybody's going to get out of a wheelchair, but what I am saying is, if you reduce the inflammation and modulate the immune system, and you can repair the joint damage for a rheumatoid arthritis patient, you can definitely help them get to a more normal life. So the answer is, autoimmune diseases respond beautifully to these cells. And by the way, there have been 65,000 research papers on mesenchymal cells. There have been over 5,000 research papers on stem cells from your fat, or what are called adipose tissue.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, so people,
so they know this is, they know this is a huge, that this works,
right,
and that there's
right.
So, but the U.S. has decided not to be a leader in this. And so what is the U.S. doing in this field, and what's going on with the FDA?
Well, you know, that's a question that generally can be answered with opinion and speculation, in terms of motivations. But in essence, it's a very, very slow process. I was listening to a TED talk today on using stem cells for neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's. And one of the points that the guy made, at first he showed why stem cells should work, and showed some images of how they did work for MS, or for, I think, MS in particular. And he was referring to stem cells from bone marrow, I believe. So,
and yours works with MS too, right?
We've seen patients benefit with MS.
Okay.
Absolutely. But again, I'm not saying it's a cure or that every single patient's going to respond the same way, but we've seen some remarkable benefits with some of our MS patients. We've seen really remarkable benefits with Parkinson's.
But Sona, why is the FDA and the U.S. deciding we're not going to be a leader in this, and we're going to stall, and we're going to take forever before we're allowing people to do it, to a point where the technology is ready to go and you have to go to other countries to set up facilities? And doctors are doing it because they want to give their patients a means of, you know, dealing with their problems. And the U.S. is, you know, has their thumb up their behind. Why? You know, for lack of a better words, what is going on with the United States being such a pansy? I mean, they're not leading in, we're not even a follower in this.
Well, in some ways, I think there are three factors that dovetail to slow this down, right? One is, and this is what this speaker in the TED Talk was explaining, is that we just have a very burdensome drug approval process.
One big bureaucracy.
Oddly, well, the average time from conception, or from early research to drug approval, is about 15 years, and costs about $2.5 billion. And only 8% of all drugs that start clinical trials get approved.
Yeah, well, unless you're very, very, very wealthy and have deep pockets, you can't make a difference in this country and in the medical world.
Well.
That's what you just said.
Yeah,
you just said that to me.
Yes, ma'am. I can't deny it. I was just trying to be more politically correct about it. You're right.
Well, but it's true, right? Unless you're really, really wealthy and you got deep pockets, it's going to take a long time anyways, but don't even bother doing any kind of thing innovative around here because you don't have enough money to do it. So you got to go to another country.
Yeah, it really requires funding from either big pharma or institutional investors through venture capital funds.
Okay.
There's very little else that happens.
I would think $500 right? million dollars would be enough to do a lot, and that's not even enough.
No. The average drug costs $2.5 billion to get approved. So then it takes you to the next leg in the why is it so slow stool, which is the FDA has determined, and I don't necessarily agree with this, but I'm compliant with it. The FDA has determined that stem cells, these natural repair stem cells in your own body, are actually a drug and need to be regulated by the FDA.
That's ridiculous. Your own cells are a drug.
Yeah. So
now what is their agenda on that one? Because come on, there's some kind of, I mean, that's just crazy.
You know, I can only speculate, but then there is a third thing that you just alluded to that could lead you to different conclusions. Well, there's actually two more things. One is if they're your own biology and they're still a drug, kind of hard to patent those.
You can't patent the process.
You might be able to patent the process, but I can't patent your cell. It's yours.
And because you can't patent it, they don't maybe want, I mean, you're trying to guess at what their agenda is, but it might mess up the money. It'll mess up the money in the medical industry.
Well, I mean, so put another way, there's no real incentive for big pharma to invest in research that involves
sense.
Your own stem cells because they can't patent them. So the only thing they can do is say, hey, we're going to modify your cells and we're going to do what they did in Japan. They're called induced pluripotent cells. So they do something to them.
They can patent it. And that's what they do to seeds and things like that. And that makes sense that it's hard for them to be incented to something that they can't make money on. I get that. You know, we are living in the real world. But what is the FDA's reason for saying that you can't do it? Because, I mean, they've come up with trying to say, claim it's a drug. Now that seems like it's just taking something way out of left field and making a rule so that no advancement and no innovation in this can go forward.
Yeah, well, that, so.
I mean, I don't really even know another conclusion unless somebody out there who's listening can come on, you know, can tell us, can, you know, send me an email or tell me what in the world is the FDA's thinking on this? Why would your own cells be considered a drug? If anyone out there has any information or anything on how the FDA can have a viable reason for this, I'd love to hear it. And then I'll share it with the audience later.
Good. So I will say that the FDA's primary job is to protect U.S. citizens from bad drugs, adverse events, etc. So their first thing, and this is a little bit of a funky paradox, is the concept of do no harm is this standard in medicine, right? The Hippocratic Oath, right?
Yep.
So if you do nothing for somebody because something you might do for them might harm them in 10 or 15 or 20 years, is that doing no harm? You know, in other words, how you define do no harm is
well,
a problem.
I would, yeah, yep. and if you're sitting with a chronic disease and you're using somebody's own cells and it's repairing and it's making these huge difference, in 20 years, let's say it reverses itself or something, well, I think most people would live with that.
Well, I think that most, so when we started this adventure initially, the kind of response I got from talking to potential patients or investors or friends was, hey, it's not FDA approved. Maybe it's not good. Maybe it doesn't work. Now they're, for some reason, 4 or 5 years later, their response is completely different, which is, well, the FDA hasn't approved it. It probably works.
That's so cynical, but you know, it's probably true. Did you see the Big Short yet? That movie about Wall Street? You'd probably love it, spending time on Wall Street. But anyways,
well, not only that, my original fund was a short selling fund. So,
oh, was it really? Oh, yes. Yeah, so you'll find this is, it's just an entertaining. It's half comedy, but it's pretty serious too, obviously. But there's a scene in the movie where they're sitting around this boardroom and they're sitting there. They can't believe the whole market's doing what it's doing, and there's all this fraud. And the guy's like, I'm sitting around the most cynical people I know, and after everything you know, you still can't believe what Wall Street's doing. And everybody's just quiet because they know what he said is true. You know, you're not naive. You complain about it all the time, but then it happens and you're still shocked. But anyways.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're absolutely right. So with the FDA, it's complex. And here's another interesting thing. Despite the fact that the FDA has stated clearly in their regulations, one is called 1271, and then a subset of that, I think, is called 361 and 351, that the stem cells in your body are a drug. There are what I call rogue stem cell clinics in the United States providing stem cell therapy, and the FDA is only now just beginning to implement market discipline because they are seeing that it's not as benign to do this if you don't do it right.
Oh, so there are issues with it if you're not good at what you do.
Well, because you see, the technology we use is approved in Europe, Asia, Australia, Singapore, just not the United States, right? Japan, it's approved in. China,
there's a lot of countries where it's like that, where there's a lot of machinery and technology that in the medicine and the medical industry in different countries that is just not approved here.
Yeah.
And this is one of them, which is, but go ahead.
Yeah. But in many ways, it may be the most important one, right?
It's one of them.
The key thing.
Because there's some cancer stuff that people are working on that they can't work on here, but they can work on in other countries. And that's really disheartening as well. But go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. But my point is, so if you're a U.S. stem cell provider, you don't have access to the technology we have because the company that manufactures our technology to separate the stem cells from the fat is compliant with FDA, and they won't sell it to U.S. doctors. So the U.S. doctors that are using fat or adipose-derived stem cells in the United States are using either simple centrifuges and an enzyme, but not really.
So why? Why won't they let the doctors here have access to more advanced equipment?
Because it just goes back to the same thing. The FDA's been very slow, some people think obstructive, in approving stem cell therapy or devices for stem cell therapy in the United States. Their argument is they're super cautious, and I understand that. So now what's happened is you have these little clinics that say, we do stem cell therapy, but they don't really do it because you don't get very many stem cells.
Oh, so I US see. Because their process just isn't that efficient, and it's not the same.
Like literally, per the scientific literature and data we have internally on a new protocol that we have for the technology we use, we can get up to 100 times more therapeutic cells than a U.S. stem cell provider. And there's one research paper that talks about these stem cell clinics in the United States, or the technology these stem cell clinics use in the United States, where they say they get an irrelevant number of stem cells. So it's a super important distinction that not all stem cell clinics provide the same product.
You know,
the same quality.
I got to ask a question here. The FDA will fast track certain drugs for certain companies, but then for certain things, they take forever. So what is the difference? Why is it that they're fast tracking certain things and not other things?
Well, again, I think it actually starts with big pharma and institutional investors. Because this isn't patentable, or there's not many opportunities to patent, institutional investors and big pharma don't invest enough to even get it on a fast track course. That's the problem.
Yeah, our medical industry shouldn't be so based on money like this, because we spend so much on taxes. I mean, where the heck is our tax money going if it's not to make us healthier? You know, I mean, my God, with all the money that we spend, you shake your head, because if there's a place we can spend money to protect, you know, like the military. Everybody understands the military because whether you agree with how much we spend or not, but, you know, it's for self-defense. But isn't this self-defense? Aren't we protecting our people? And we don't even have to spend a fraction of what we'd have to spend on the military to protect our people.
But yeah, that's right.
But
you're absolutely right. So it's pretty crazy, but there's just not enough investment to even get to the fast track place, because there's not, you know, there's an idea here that, and you're saying this something that I would say in a different way. People think that in order to make money in technology or healthcare or biotech, that you have to have something really, you know, that's patentable and proprietary, nobody else can do. You have to have a monopoly product. And I argue that that's very short-sighted, that what you really have to be is a market leader and do it right, but there's no need to have a monopoly on products that could help billions of people, or even hundreds of millions, or even tens of millions, or even millions. There's no reason to have a monopoly. Those markets are so big. Like, when you think about how big is the market for chronic disease, and you realize that 50% of the U.S. population has a chronic disease, why do you need a monopoly?
You don't. You don't need a monopoly on that. You don't need a monopoly on that.
Yeah.
So
to be clear, or to give a great example, Mayo Clinic's, I'm sure, very profitable. They may be not for profit, but I'm sure they're profitable, if you understand what I mean.
Yes.
Cleveland Clinic is, you know, a brand name. Cedars-Sinai is a brand name. Mount Sinai is a brand name. MD Anderson's a brand name. They don't really have anything. They don't have any, you know, they don't have, I mean, maybe they have some patents, but they do what every other hospital does. They might just do it better.
Well, you know, I teach entrepreneurship at the university, the University of Minnesota, and we do talk about what it takes, you know, to get venture-backed funding and what you want to look for and stuff and things. But there's a difference. You don't all have to be home runs to do something right. And like you said, the market is huge. And we talk about that a lot in class. There's only a few people that really have business ideas out of a class of 60. We had a few ideas when we were all generating ideas that probably could have been a home run venture capital based, you know, idea. The rest are ideas where people really do it because they have a passion behind it. And if you have a passion behind what you're doing, and you're really helping people, and you're making a big difference in the lives of many people, you'll make a good living, you'll make a lot of money, and you'll make it better for the people around you. And that's what entrepreneurs do anyways. It's not always about money.
Right. And the poster child for that, or the epitome of that, is Elon Musk, where he said, "I'm putting Tesla's patents. I'm making them open source. People can just use them."
He's trying to make a difference.
Right.
Yeah, he's an entrepreneur, but doing it differently. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I think your point and my point are the same, which is, you don't have to be sort of you don't have to have a monopoly, particularly in markets as deep and as broad as healthcare or automotive or energy. You just don't have to be. You don't have to have a monopoly. I know that that sounds.
Well, in fact, you don't want monopolies, right? I know if you have a monopoly, you can set the price, you can make everybody buy from you, but then you're only benefiting yourself in that one product that you have. It's like when AT&T fell and, you know, was broken up, and how far technology went when that went down. You know, I mean, there's technology just exploded. So your life in other ways is so much better without you having a monopoly. Yeah, you might not have the power. You might not have ultimate power over everybody, but your life's going to improve in so many other ways, and so is all the people around you. It's kind of like East Germany. Yeah, East Germany, when they went down or whatever, everybody's life got better.
Right. And I mean, a really great example, right? If I can remember this, is that I'm trying to remember exactly what Apple's smartphone market share is, but it's something. I'm trying to remember.
It's a crazy percentage.
Right. No, but it's small, in the sense that they have maybe 20 or 30, or let's say maximum 40% of the market share in terms of volume, but they have something like 80 or 90% of the profit. So the idea that the only way you can be profitable.
Exactly. It's different. Yes.
Is to have every consumer required to buy from you is just not proven out in fact. And again, you look at, hey, if 80% of people 65 and older have two or more chronic diseases, let's just do what we can to help them. And it would be great, as you keep pointing out, if the FDA had a pathway that was both safe but also efficient. And the trouble is that the amount of safety that they're focused on, which I agree with, in many ways, is still the regulatory burden is so high that people are dying of chronic diseases or living with chronic diseases that could easily be living a more normal life, and we see it every day.
Well, there just needs to be, you know, the system's always been put in place for a reason, but there's a better way to do it. And when we put people through this blind process, so many people get hurt, right? You see that in everything. You can't just have this blind process for everybody. Well, it's now we're hurting so many people. You could go in and say, okay, we know that these things show a certain amount of promise, but why don't we allow people who are in dire straits to have the chance? It's just kind of like when people had HIV and they had to picket the streets, and it was huge. You know, it was a huge protest to get the people off their butt to do something, because they wanted to go through this long process, making sure all the pharmaceutical companies had their say and they had first dibs on stuff. And then the first drug that came out was the most expensive drug that had ever been put out there, you know, so they were just completely taking advantage of people. So until people went out there and said, hey, this is not good enough, and we want better, and we deserve better, did they get off their butt and change it? You know, it took years. It was a battle. But it changed, and it got better for people. And I think, you know, as more people realize that these things exist, you know, there are solutions out there for people, and people need to realize that these solutions exist. And if they realize these solutions exist, then they can go to the FDA in mass. We can start saying, hey, this isn't good enough for us. You serve us, and this isn't good enough. You're not serving us good enough. You need to get better at your job.
There you go. And you're absolutely right. And the thing that's stunning is, look, there, like I said, there are 65,000 papers on mesenchymal cells. There are over 5,000 on adipose or fat-derived cells. There's no debate as to whether they're safe. There's tons of validation in the lab and animals and people about these multiple mechanisms of anti-inflammation, immunomodulation.
Basically, we see all these good things. We don't see any bad stuff. From everything that we see, they're safe, and they're helping people enormously. Why are we not able to use this for people? I mean, it's just
right.
It's such obvious thing that we're something's wrong with the system. The system's broken, essentially.
Yeah, and the question is, from the government's point of view, their incentive is safety, and from the capital markets point of view, or the investment point of view, their incentive is, is profits and maximizing profits, and they tend to be very focused on this monopoly product concept.
But at least I understand that, because they have a right to be that way, because it's their business and they can choose to spend their money and do what they want when they want. But I don't, the FDA doing what they're doing is unacceptable.
Right. So what we ought to have is what's happening in Japan, or even in some ways slightly differently in Europe, where you prove safety first and then you can market. And that's what the Bahamian government was so brilliant about, is they said, look, we just want to be sure that it's safe and that there's a substantial amount of literature that this could be efficacious and or help people. And so everything we do, we have had to document with the Bahamian National Stem Cell Ethics Committee to show that it's safe and that there's literature to support treating people for the condition that they have.
And then if it is safe, the government is being ethical and saying, wow, this is really going to help people. How can we help you help people? How can we just clear the path for you so that you can do what you need to do?
Yeah, and we are seeing that in developed countries, not just developing countries. So we're seeing that in Japan. They passed legislation at the end of 2014, I believe, that's significantly more patient-friendly than the U.S. Same with Europe. They have legislation that's significantly more patient-friendly than the U.S. China, same thing. So, and then the Bahamas, which is 55 miles from the U.S. That's the great thing about where we are. And they're rigorous about it. Like, this is not.
Well, they see it, if they're smart, which it sounds like they are, they see it as a heck of an opportunity for them. I mean, here we got this big behemoth that's stuck in the mud, and we can do something great, and we can really help our country here and help people. And it's just all good, 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 good.
Exactly.
Well,
absolutely.
I thank you so much for coming on the show today. I appreciate it, and giving us an education on all this. And where can people learn more about your company, and how, you know, if they have a family, they have a friend, I'm sure all of us have families and family members or friends who could benefit from this. Where can they learn more about your stuff?
Well, like all countries, like all companies today, we have a website, and I would argue it's the most robust, informative website on adult stem cell therapy, and it's www.okyanos, O-K-Y-A-N as in Nancy, O-S as in Sam, .com. So that's O-K-Y-A-N-O-S www.stemcellsinc.com.
Okay.
And if they go, and then we have, you know, candidate forms that people can fill out, and we respond to them within 24 hours. And one of the things, if there's one more minute, is that we've done this in a world-class way. We've built a world-class facility. We have world-class doctors. We have a full medical team.
And they're all U.S. They're all U.S.-based certified doctors, right?
Well, actually, the Bahamas has so we use a couple doctors from the Bahamas. Our anesthesiologist is board certified, did fellowship, I believe, at Cambridge, and he's actually a Bahamian. We've got an orthopedic doctor who does injections, and he's also from the Bahamas. We have a U.S. double board certified plastic surgeon who does the fat harvest and other parts of our procedure. But, you know, board certified plastic surgeons are extraordinarily highly trained. They've done rotations in many other subspecialties like orthopedic, gynecology, urology, et cetera. So he's double board certified because he's also trained, as an oral surgeon. A board certified oral surgeon.
So the bottom line is your talent and your skill sets are on par with the best facilities here in the United States, if not better.
I believe so. You know, I really believe so. Yes, absolutely.
And better just because there isn't any other facility doing that. So now you have the experience they don't have.
Well, yeah, I mean, we made the investment that, look, you can go to a stem cell doctor in wherever, and they can bring you into their little, OR, and you may not have a completely sterile environment. You may not have an RN as a nurse in there. We have full acute care in every recovery room. We've never used it, but we've got it. We've got the top type of cath lab, so that when we do inject in the heart, for heart failure, no one else can do that in the world other than in a research trial. So we've done things that no one else we've invested in the cell processing, the medical team, the facility, the protocols, so that we can do something at a standard of care that is really incomparable to anything you can get other than in a clinical trial, in which case you might get a placebo.
Well, I just see this as a game-changing deal where it can really make a difference in people's lives. And as it starts to make a difference in lives, then people build off of it and come up with even more technologies to really make a difference for people. But you got to start with the basics of what it can do, and then they can build from it. I mean, if you're just, because, you just started in 2014 with all this stuff, and I know the research has been going on for years and years and years, but just imagine what you can do with this in another couple decades. I mean, you're already making huge progress in people's lives, but unless we got to start down the road, I'm excited. I think you guys, good job. We need people like you making a difference.
And we need people like you helping get the story out. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, you're welcome. You have a wonderful day.
Good. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
I am sorry we do not have enough time to air this entire episode or this entire interview. So go to my website at sarahwestall.com, and you can download the full podcast there, the full interview. It's very interesting. You can also get contact information for him. If you have anyone that has any of these autoimmune diseases, MS, Parkinson's, rheumatoid arthritis, I urge you to talk to them and to find out if this is something that can help your loved ones. I think there's amazing opportunities to make their life just better. They never claim that they're going to cure it or that they're going to solve it 100%, but they do say they can make people's lives a lot better than just pharmaceutical drugs can do and the therapies that you can get in the United States. And once again, you can get these therapies. It's legal all over the developed world, just not here in the United States. So it is something you want to look at. And Bahamas, like you said, is only 55 miles off the coast. So it's a great opportunity for those that are suffering with these kind of chronic diseases. And also, I want to remind you about the great financing opportunity that I have on sarahwestall.com. It's 0%, and you just need a 650 credit score and 0% interest. It's the least expensive financing you're going to find out there, period. So if you are a small company, there's no collateral. So small company, startup, whatever, if you have needs of having financing, 18 months, 0%. So if you need short-term financing for a project, for inventory, for just to be able to develop your cash flow as a startup, to be able to set up that line, it's a perfect opportunity. So go to sarahwestall.com to get information on that. And again, I have an exciting interview for next week with Gwen Shotwell, and she's the president of SpaceX. She's going to tell us all about SpaceX's goal of getting out into the universe and habiting other planets. Very interesting conversation. So for now, everyone have a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific Time. And learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.